25. 3 hours later, most of the wizards sat around in Gary's newly remodeled home in medieval England. Shortly after they all reconvened, Louisa and Jimmy left to go put their heads together on a solution to the glitch without distractions. Britt the Younger excused herself to go be Britt the One-Hour Elder and guide the evacuation of Atlantis. She returned in a matter of seconds, and the two functioning Brits got to work. Britt the Younger and Britt the Much Elder had made it clear that the only way the others could really assist them would be to stop trying. Since then, the others had merely sat on the two built-in sofas that lined the sides of Gary's brand-new conversation pit, feeling utterly superfluous, yet too emotionally invested in the proceedings to leave. Besides, the Brits could declare that they were ready to try their fix at any moment, and they all wanted to be there, either to watch it happen or to try to stop them. They wouldn't be sure which until the time came. They sat as far from the Brits as they could, lest the grim silence grow too distracting for them. The Brits worked on two identical, high-powered computers set up on the dining table with two monitors each. On each monitor, they had the same set of windows open in the same pattern. Martin found the whole scene weirdly fractal, but looked at the faces of his friends and chose not to mention it. Britt the Elder hung suspended in midair, frozen in the exact position she'd sat in back at her home. Her left arm was extended in front of her as if rested on her desk. Her right hand hovered in space, the index finger extending downward to press the button of a mouse that was nowhere to be found. A dry washcloth protruded from her mouth, deadening the constant squeal she produced. The washcloth had long since started glitching at random intervals, just like Britt the Elder herself. Clear down at the far end of the room, future Philip sat, leaning against the wall, sulking in his silent prison. He'd been told that he could go free if he'd just tell them how to fix the mess they were in, but he said nothing and stayed in his transparent box. Across from Martin were Tyler, Gary, and Roy, looking around in a bored, uncomfortable manner, each exuding that unique attitude that most men are capable of but only use in theaters and airplanes. That they don't want to seem uncomfortable sitting next to each other, but are still going to great pains to make sure that there is no physical contact whatsoever. Martin glanced at Gwen, who sat beside him on the couch, drumming her fingers. They were all in a terrible, stressful situation, but he and Gwen had made up, and Martin refused to feel guilty for being happy about it. Beyond her, Philip sat, ramrod straight, with his eyes closed in thought. All in all, wizards had little to do but stand by, look concerned, and examine Gary's redecorated home. The quality of the decor was all too predictable. Gary had created a stylish bachelor pad, as envisioned by a man with little or no style. Dim lights almost illuminated walnut paneling and an assortment of darkly colored furnishings, as if Gary had figured that if people couldn't really see his home, they would simply assume it was cool.
"Where are all of your apprentices?" Jeff asked.
Gary said, "Out in the clearing in front of the cave, doing some landscaping. I'm thinking of putting in a swimming pool. I disguise it to look like a pit full of blood or lava or something, but it'll be a normal pool full of water, with a diving board and a spa."
"In ground or above ground?"
Tyler asked. Gary grimaced at him.
"In ground? Who's ever heard of an above ground pit of blood? That just looked cheap."
Martin said,
"You should have had them make you a shoe rack. If you're going to make us take off our shoes before we come in, you should give us somewhere nice to put them, instead of just making us leave them in a heap outside the door."
"I've got a brand new carpet to protect. And I like the shoe heap," Gary said. "If any locals see it, they'll assume the shoes belong to my victims."
Martin ran his foot across the cream-colored shag, noting that his toes almost got lost in the strands.
"It is quite a carpet. I didn't know they made them this thick."
"I had to special order it. It's the deepest pile they can make."
Gwen said, "The pile is deep. I'll give you that." Roy examined the joinery of one of the dining chairs.
"I'll admit, the workmanship's really good for a bunch of untrained medieval peasants."
Gary laughed.
"No, this isn't the stuff they made. I went to the future, bought what I wanted, then had the guys try to make something similar. When they were pretty much done, I swapped what they made with the good stuff with a cloud of smoke and a light show and told them the tools I gave them were enchanted."
"Why go to the trouble?"
Tyler asked.
I want to build up their confidence, make them feel like they're capable of accomplishing things.
So you lied to them?
Yeah. I didn't know any other way to do it, in their case.
Martin looked at Philip. He had been through an awful lot, and Martin was concerned for his friend.
How's your hand?
Philip flexed the fingers of his right hand. He had put on a black glove and pulled his robe sleeve down to cover his wrist.
It feels okay. I think it's almost up to the elbow, but I kinda don't have the nerve to look. I saw Britt the Elder's problem spread to her shoes, but I just didn't think about it spreading to other people. What's done is done. I've got more important things to worry about. You know, I considered going with a sequined glove, a sort of a tribute to Michael Jackson.
Martin said, I'd suggest a metal gauntlet, like in the Army of Darkness. It's a bit less dated of a reference.
Gwen muttered, just a bit. Philip looked up toward Britt the Younger, pouring all of her concentration into the computer monitor. Martin saw a strange certainty in Philip's eyes, as if he had made some momentous decision and now intended to act on it. Martin said, no.
What?
Philip asked.
Don't do it.
Don't do what?
Whatever you're about to do.
You have no idea what I intend to do.
True, but I know it's something, and anything you could do other than sit there looking unhappy would be a mistake.
I'm just going to tell Britt.
Martin put up a hand. I'll stop you there. Making contact, any contact with Britt, any Britt, is a terrible move. One of them can't talk to anybody, and the other two don't want to talk to you.
Philip said,
I know, and that's why I need to talk to them.
Gwen shook her head. You see what women have to put up with? All of the male wizards who weren't Philip nodded. Roy said,
Phil, when your engine overheats, do you let it cool off or do you step on the gas? Give them time to cool down. I need to make it clear that I'm sorry and that I want to help.
Tyler nodded.
Understandable.
Thank you.
And you intend to do so by doing something you know they don't want.
I rescind my thank you.
You shouldn't, Gwen said. You should double down on it. The guys are giving you good relationship advice. I'm as surprised as anyone. If you're smart, you'll listen and do nothing until some Brit gives you a signal that they want to talk to you. Philip said,
You're probably right. I should wait for them to make a move.
Yes, you should.
Unless...
No, Gwen pointed at him. No, unless...
Unless by not talking to me, they're leaving me an opening. They could be waiting for me to make the first move. Why, if you look at it that way, I'd be a fool not to go talk to them.
Yes, Martin said. If you look at it that way being incorrectly.
Philip stood up, straightened out his robe, and asked Gwen,
How do I look?
Like a man about to make a terrible mistake. Philip ignored her and walked to the edge of the conversation pit, near the table where Britt the Younger and Britt the Much Elder were hard at work, conferring in hushed tones over some line of code or other. Philip smiled sheepishly, looked up as he was standing in a pit beneath the Brits, and cleared his throat. Britt the Younger said, No. Philip walked up the two steps out of the pit.
I just wanted to.
Britt the Much Elder looked at him, not entirely unsympathetically.
You heard her.
Philip didn't slow his pace as he hooked around in a tight U-turn, stepped back down into the pit, walked back to his seat, and sat down. As he settled into his seat, he noted the looks of sadness, mixed with amusement, on the faces of his friends. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw future Philip, sitting, disconsolate, in his invisible prison, making an obscene gesture at him.
That went exactly as well as I expected, Gwen said.
A high-pitched warbling sound rang out. Gary held up his left hand, a flat image of Jimmy giving a thumbs up in front of the famous Reno, the biggest little city in the world arch, floated in the empty space above his upturned palm.
You gave him a custom ring image?
Philip grumbled. Gary answered the call.
What's up, Jimmy? Louise and I've been talking and we have a suggestion to make. Is everyone still at your place? Yeah. Mind if we come over? Sure, see you soon.
Gary hung up. Philip asked,
Are you really comfortable having Jimmy in your home?
Gary said,
He called before he came over. That's more than any of you does anymore.
Jimmy and Louisa appeared. Jimmy said,
Hey, everyone. Louisa and I've been looking at things.
Gary said,
Shoes. What? My carpet. It's brand new. Please take off your shoes.
Jimmy and Louisa both hastily slipped off their shoes. Louisa bent at the knees, scooping her shoes up off of the ground in a single fluid movement. She looked around for a moment, then asked,
"Where should we put them?"
Gary said, "There's a big pile of them just outside the door."
"Clearly, you think how we treat your carpet is more important than how we treat our shoes."
Gary shrugged. "To me, yes. It's my carpet, and they aren't my shoes." Once they'd deposited their shoes on the top of the pile of footwear just outside the door, Jimmy said,
"So, as I was saying, Louise and I have been looking at things. Combining what she knows about medical research and what I know about altering people's file entries, we've worked out a schedule for how to safely research Britt the Elder's problem, and in time, come up with the solution."
Everyone faced Jimmy and Louisa except Britt the Younger, who kept her eyes on her monitor. Britt the Much Elder said,
"Hey, Britt, they say I heard what they said."
"Well, don't you think you should listen to—"
"I am listening to them. I can listen and work at the same time. That's how I heard him in the first place."
Britt the Much Elder shrugged and turned her attention back to Jimmy and Louisa.
Louisa said, "Everyone agrees that we need to figure out what's gone wrong with Britt the Elder, and by extension, Atlantis and Philip's hand. Jimmy and I have laid out some protocols for how to ethically experiment with the code in a way that will slowly build until eventually you'll be able to make certain specific changes to Britt the Elder's code with a reasonable certainty of safety."
Gwen asked,
"Could you please define what you mean by a reasonable certainty of safety?"
"Don't bother," Britt the Younger said, still focusing on her monitor.
"Tell me about eventually. How long is that?"
Louisa shook her head.
"It's impossible to say for sure."
"Take a guess."
"You can't rush these things."
"So how long will I be wishing I could rush it?"
Jimmy bit his lip.
"Phase one should take around, I'd say, 6 months."
Britt the Younger took her eyes off of her monitor and spun her chair to the side so she faced Jimmy and Louisa.
"It should take around 6 months? Should? About? There's a lot of wiggle room in those words. How long would it take, exactly?"
Jimmy said, "Probably somewhat longer."
"Probably somewhat?"
Louisa said,
"We can't tell you exactly because we don't know, but we believe it would take at least 6 months.
For phase one?"
"Yes."
"And how many phases are there?"
Jimmy said,
"Something like 5.
"Something like?"
"Depending on how successful it is. If any of the phases fail, we'll need to repeat it until it works."
Britt the Younger said, "No, thank you." "But then we can come back in time with the solution, and Britt the Elder, Atlantis, and Philip's hand would all be fixed immediately."
"That's not the problem. Look, Britt the Much Elder and I have found the chunk of memory we think got corrupted. It'll take us maybe another 20 minutes to make sure we have all of it. Then we can replace it with the uncorrupted section from our memory, and we should have this all handled within the hour. It's risky, maybe. There's a chance that something could go wrong, or that it won't work. The same thing's true of your plan. It's dangerous, too, and it has a 100% chance of taking years of work to execute. If my choices are fast and dangerous versus slow and dangerous, I'll take fast and dangerous every time."
"Yes, but remember, we're time travelers. We wouldn't experience it in real time."
"The rest of you wouldn't, but I would. For all of you, a future version of me would pop up any second now, present the fix she worked on for years, and then you all will say, 'Problem solved, then,' and get on with your lives. I'm the one who'll be stuck doing the years of work."
Philip said, "You wouldn't have to do it alone. We'd all help."
"But it's not all of your future, or all of your brains we're talking about. It's mine. Your hand and Atlantis would get fixed as a byproduct of dangerous experiments on my head. I would need to supervise everything, and in the end, I would end up doing most, if not all, of the real work myself. We're talking about me making the saving of Britt the Elder my life's work, while the rest of you help out on an occasional basis. I can see where this is an attractive plan for the rest of you, but I'm not buying it."
"Okay," Gary said. "You're against it. Does that mean it's off the table, really? Something this important, shouldn't we put it to a vote?"
"A vote?" Britt the Younger asked. "We're discussing my time and effort put into performing a dangerous procedure that I've already said that I'm against on me, and you think we should put it to a vote?"
"It just seems like the most democratic way,"
Gary said, his voice growing quieter with each word.
It would be. But I don't remember ever making my personal life choices a democracy.
Roy said,
Look, you're right that this affects you more immediately than it does the rest of us. But we are all involved. If her glitch continues unchecked, it could crash the whole program, and then we're all done.
Britt the Younger said, All the more reason to get this fixed fast.
No, Roy said. All the more reason to get it fixed right.
Okay, Britt the Younger said. Think about this. The idea is that we, and by we I mean me, we spend however many years fixing this mess Britt the Elder made, then what, we, and again I mean me, come back and fix her here in our present, her future me's past? If that's what we end up doing, then where's the future whoever with the solution they spent years on? Where are they, hmm? I mean, if it were me, you'd think they'd turn up right now just to prove the point, wouldn't you? So let's wait a second and see if any more of me turn up.
They all stood in silence for a moment, more out of awkwardness than any real expectation that visitors from the future would materialize. Nobody appeared. Britt the Younger nodded.
Right. So I guess that settles...
She stopped abruptly as another iteration of Britt appeared, raised her hands in the air, and held that pose as a wave of energy emanated out from her, filling the room. When the light had dissipated, all eyes turned to Britt the Elder, who still floated, frozen and unresponsive, flickering at random intervals. Philip pulled the black glove off his hand. The entire front was still affected, with only a small patch on the back left unchanged. Britt the Much Elder said,
It didn't work. I hope you didn't spend too much time on that.
The Brit who had just appeared said, I didn't. I'm only from a couple of minutes in the future, and all I did was put everyone who isn't a Brit into one of Martin's mime boxes, so they can't keep us from handling this the way we want. She disappeared as suddenly as she'd appeared. The wizards all pressed their hands against the unseen barrier that held them in. They shouted magic spells meant to transport them out of their invisible prisons. When that failed, they shouted various things, first at the Brits, then at the mime box itself, before they settled into shouting at Martin. He tried to tell them that he couldn't hear them, but they couldn't hear him, and kept shouting.